This is Sherry Bayer from All in the Industry. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Everybody, welcome to today's episode of Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Claudia Wu.
And I'm Carrie Diamond, and we're the founders of Cherry Bomb, the indie magazine about women and food.
We're broadcasting live from Heritage Radio Network, located in the back of Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Today's show is all about creativity. Joining us from San Francisco is one of the most creative chefs in the industry, Dom, or Dominique Crenn, of Italia Crenn and the new, brand new, Petite Crenn that just opened. Dominique was the first woman in America to receive two Michelin stars. She also has a brand new cookbook, Metamorphosis of Taste, which is one of the most beautiful cookbooks we've ever seen, Dom.
Before we get started, let's thank our sponsor, American Express Open, for supporting this season of Radio Cherry Bomb. We're big fans of the American Express Open Shop Small campaign and how Open supports small businesses, so we couldn't be happier about this partnership. Don't forget to dine small and shop small and support the indie businesses in your neighborhood.
Before Dominique joins us, we have a special guest calling in from London, Nicole Herft, who is the food stylist on the new film Burnt, which stars Bradley Cooper as a disgraced chef looking to reclaim his place in the industry. The film hasn't gotten the best reviews, but people seem to love two things about Burnt: Bradley and the food. So let's talk to the woman responsible for the latter. We should talk to the woman responsible for Bradley, too, but next show.
She's not on the line. So Liz, our engineer Liz Smith, is patching in Nicole. Nicole, are you on the air?
Yes, I'm online.
Hi. So nice to meet you.
Hi, how are you doing?
Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so tell us a little about yourself and how you ended up working on this film.
Oh, okay. I started off as a chef. From the age of 17 and did my apprenticeship and continued working as a chef for 9 years. I moved from Australia to London at 21 and have been in London ever since. And I was cooking as a chef in London, and I was dating a photographer at the time and was moonlighting as a photography assistant, and then started getting into the world of food styling that way because we put a food portfolio together so that he could get some other work apart from lifestyle work. And then I started getting food styling work, his portfolio, and started probably 10 years ago, changing careers from being a chef to being a food stylist.
Do you still work in restaurants, or are you firmly in the food styling world now?
No, I definitely don't work in restaurants anymore. But those days are done. I will throw a cafe party if someone asks nicely, or if I have the time. But TV land and cookbooks and magazines and films, have got me firmly now.
So how did you get this gig doing the food for Burnt? Because quite a bit.
They had a food stylist on board, but hadn't quite tested out her plating skills. So realized that her style wasn't as refined as they needed. So they needed someone pretty quick. And I got a couple of emails and a phone call and sort of had to drop everything and be at the studio to meet everyone, like straight away. Like I was testing recipes for Atul Kutcher's book, Benares, and I had to drop everything and get to Ealing to meet everyone. And because of the, I sort of work with some really good chefs over here, like Jason Atherton and Tom Kerridge being the most prevalent, and they're all Michelin star chefs. So they wanted a food stylist that was Michelin star trained, and I think I'm as close as you can get to that because of all the chefs that I work with over here.
Nicole, hi, it's Carrie speaking.
Hi.
Now. Did you actually go to New Orleans to film that part of the movie?
No, because that was only like 1 or 2 days filming, and it was literally just that first scene of Bradley shucking oysters. But I had obviously met with everyone before then, and then they'd gone off to New Orleans, and then we started filming in London straight after.
I haven't seen the movie, but I heard that all the actors kind of had to work with the food on film, basically. So were you involved in that training? Did you have to teach them how to plate?
Sierra and Bradley went to Marcus Waring's restaurant, the Barclay, for a couple of days of training. I think the one that I ended up having to train, Marcus Waring was on set to kind of make sure the chefs were looking like a chef. I think it's hard to sort of gain that authority and that knowledge of knowing what you're doing before you even do it, which is it's a kind of stance that a chef has. Omar Sy was the one that I had to teach because basically all the guys had been in the kitchen for 2 days filming, and Omar was filming on something else in Paris, I think. So when he got set, he was this huge character, but just looked completely like a fish of water in his role of the kitchen, because he's obviously sous chef in the kitchen, and he did not look comfortable in the kitchen. So John Wells, the director, said, "You need to take him into your kitchen and teach him how to cook fish over and over again until he can do it." And yeah. I was like, "Okay." So we spent it was only about an hour and a half, but we went through about 40 pieces of fish, and I think it's more a matter of them, they just need to look in control of what they're doing. So we didn't give them big lots of things to do. We gave them an action, and they practiced that action until they looked like they knew what they were doing.
Was the food real food? Like, could you actually eat the food that you were cooking?
Yes, absolutely. It was all real food, all by the best suppliers in London. They wanted Michelin star, right? So there was no cutting corners with the quality of the produce and the food. I mean, we were getting our fish from Cornwall. We were getting our meat from the best suppliers. We were using, really, really great suppliers. MASH was our fruit and veggie supplier, and they have the most pristine produce. And, there was no cutting corners in any of that at all.
How is working on a movie different from the other gigs that you've done, like the magazines and TV shows?
So different. so different. When you work on a cookery show, it's paced. You might be shooting four or five recipes a day with different chefs, and it's paced. It's the repetitiveness in a film, because depending on how many people are in that scene, they need to feature each and every one of them. So if we were shooting a kitchen scene with, we had like 10 boys in the kitchen plus Sienna, they would need to shoot that from 10 different angles if they wanted to get everyone in that scene. So it was just the pure repetitiveness of having everything be the same every single time for every angle, for every person.
Did you enjoy it?
I did enjoy it. It was awesome. It was the hardest job of my career by far. I worked like 70 days straight, I think. And it was very different in the sense I've done another film before called Jadoo. And that was on a much smaller scale. When you sort of work with something as awesome as the Weinstein Company with actors that are Hollywood A-list, everybody is at the absolute A-list of their game. Like, every single person in every department was the best of the best. So it really sort of made me step up, to the mark, because everyone was just amazing. And then it was so much pressure because there's so much food, and I just knew I couldn't mess up. Like, I had to have everything there, and everything had to be perfect every time. So it was challenging in that way. It was a lot of pressure. And, you know that egg scene, where Bradley cuts the egg.
Oh, we haven't seen the movie yet.
But we will see it,
oh my God,
promise.
Have you not seen the movie?
It just opened. Dominique saw it, our guest.
Sorry, now I'm going to ruin it for you.
Dominique went to the premiere.
That's okay. So tell us about the egg scene.
There is this scene where Bradley is trying to impress the owner of a restaurant so that he can come and take it over. And he cooks this dish. And it was an egg that had been placed on a piece of halibut that then he cuts, so he shaves truffles over and cuts, and all the egg yolk then goes through the holes of the plate into a bowl that sits underneath with this fish velouté, which was all real. But, we had to shoot this. I went through 70 eggs, and eggs are cooked at 55 degrees for 15 minutes, and then you crack them out of the shell and roll them over paper towel to get all the little sort of albumen that's not set. Then you've got to lift that and put it onto a piece of perfectly cooked halibut, and that's got to go out like 40 times. Like, I was in tears when John Wells cut said, end of scene. Oh. I just burst into tears. The pressure was, I cannot tell you, it was just immense. And for every one egg that you get onto a piece of halibut, you might lose three eggs.
Yeah. Oof. What happened to all that leftover food? I know they probably had catering on a Weinstein movie, but did anyone eat it?
Oh, you know what? On a cookbook shoot, I plan my day according to what I want to eat. So, you know, like, I will plan the recipes according to what we want to have for lunch. I'll cook it around 12 or 1. We'll shoot it then so everyone can enjoy it for lunch. You know, that's not a lot of food gets wasted on that. Unfortunately, on a film, you are turning around so quickly that food was just going directly into a bucket. There's buckets on set where if something isn't right, a chef will just bang his pan into the bucket. And ultimately, that's where a lot of the food went. We tried to save, like, especially fillet steak. We went through so much fillet steak. I can't tell you how many halibuts and turbots I ordered daily. We literally couldn't prep this food fast enough. The food was phenomenal how much you go through in just one scene. And we were shooting, you know, we shot kitchen scenes back to back for 4 weeks in that purpose-built kitchen.
Wow.
And that was heavy. That was it was constant because it's like a restaurant. It's like prepping for a restaurant, but there was only three of us doing it.
Wow. The food suppliers must have loved you.
Pardon?
The food suppliers must have loved you.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got close relationships with all of them, so yeah.
So what's next?
A lot of food just went, unfortunately. It was just too fast. You couldn't. I had to concentrate on what was being shot. I couldn't concentrate on what was not. So yeah, unfortunately, a lot of it went.
So what's next for you? What are you working on these days?
I'm still doing the same thing that I was doing prior to. I'm upstairs on a shoot right now. Oh. We've just wrapped and we're shooting. I'm in the bedroom and I've put a sign on the door going, please don't come in. they're all cleaning up downstairs. But I shoot a lot of things for supermarket video online content and social media stuff. I do all of Tom Kerridge's cookbooks. He's my fave. I absolutely love him. And he's just so popular here that I'm constantly with work with him. I do other cookbooks. I'm working on John Waite's cookbook at the moment. He's a brilliant baker, and he's doing his first savory cookbook called Perfect Plate. So I'm working on that, which is brilliant. He's an amazing photographer, and he's brilliant. So really lovely gigs at the moment, actually. Really, really busy, but not crazy busy like the film. Just nice busy.
That all sounds amazing. We can't wait to see what you come up with next and all your cookbooks and everything. So thanks so much for being on the show and calling in from all the way from London.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for the opportunity. It was great to talk to you guys.
And we can't wait to see the movie.
Yes, neither can I. Wait, go and see it soon. It is amazing. I have to go and see it again, actually, because all I did was concentrate on the food, so I need to go and look at it as an actual film now.
All right, well, good luck with everything, Nicole, and we're going to start talking to Dominique now, who's been sitting patiently in the studio.
So thanks so much, Nicole. And if any of you want to see some behind-the-scenes pictures from Burnt, the movie, you can go to Nicole's Instagram account. It's eat_love_travel, or just go to the Cherry Bomb Instagram account, and you can see a picture of Nicole and her team from the shoot. So we're really excited because we have a real live Michelin-starred chef here with us who can tell us...
Two Michelin stars.
Two Michelin stars. She's not just any Michelin-starred chef. And she can tell us... Dom actually saw the movie and can tell us how a real kitchen, a real Michelin-starred kitchen, compares with the Hollywood version. So let's jump in right there. Hi, Dom.
Hi. Well, thank you so much for having me. I saw the movie, I believe, 2 weeks ago. I believe that the kitchen was very close to what a kitchen, you know, just regular kitchen is. Maybe a Michelin kitchen. It doesn't have to be a Michelin kitchen. The food looks really good.
Do you remember the scene with the truffles and the egg and the fish and the bowl with the holes in it that you talked about?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was more like trying to understand why they did a movie like this. I don't know. I think it was missing a little bit of excitement and storyline. But it's a beautiful movie. It's a beautiful movie, like beautiful picture and...
Well, we are terrible journalists and did not see the movie before interviewing Nicole, the awesome food stylist. So we will, Claudia and I will see it at some point.
An amazing job.
She did.
Yes.
Oh,
sure.
It sounds like it was a great gig. And yeah. I loved hearing her talk about like how she really had to, it really raised her game being around all these A-list people who are really so good at their jobs. And that's exciting. You know, I think.
I mean, I love the fact that they didn't cut corner And that's kind of admirable, mm-hmm. you know. So we might like or not like the storyline, but I think the way they did it, it was pretty impressive. So.
How do you, you know, we talked about the reviews being somewhat too extremely negative for that movie. And a lot of what came up was how chefs can't treat their staff like that anymore and how nobody deserves to be abused over a spice on a plate or something. And I was just curious how you run your kitchen and how that has evolved over the years.
I'm a nice person. Yeah, so I felt that it was a bit passé, and I felt that when they showed those scenes, I thought that perhaps it would be better maybe to, you know, show the culinary culture in a different, you know, way. So I thought that was a little bit of a mistake of them to do that. But there is still kitchen that run like this, unfortunately. I think it was in the 90s, and I was working in a kitchen that was pretty hardcore. And I remember the chef was okay with me, but I know he was not okay with others. And I thought that was shameful, and I thought that was just not right to do this. And I remember I said to myself, if one day I become a chef, I will treat the people that work not for me but with me in such a respectful way. And I do not allow any egos in my kitchen. I do not allow any fight in my kitchen. I do not allow any language that is not appropriate. I want people to get along, and if there is a problem, I want them to talk. And I don't think it's the right way to treat people, you know. I want to foster, you know, creativity and respect. I don't want to foster fear and people that don't believe in themselves. So,
do you run a quiet kitchen, or do you play music? What's the vibe?
No, it's pretty quiet at night. There's not really any music. It used to be like some music at one point, and it was just, I didn't like really the music choices of some of my cooks. So it's pretty quiet. It's not, you walk into my kitchen and it's, you know that people care about each other. So, and you know they want to work there, and it's kind of lovely. And then, you know, during services, it's all about work. And, you know, if someone make a mistake, I'm not going to throw the plate at him or her. I just...
Did you ever throw a plate?
No, never.
Like we mentioned, you just opened a new restaurant called Petit Crane, and it's a more casual place. And I read that you don't have any servers.
No servers.
So the cooks actually come and bring you your food.
Yes.
Which I think is so nice, because it really forges that connection between the person who's making your food and...
Well, I think that was important to create a space where... I wanted to create a space where I can go there after work, have a glass of wine and some oyster. But I wanted also to create a space that feels like home. And I thought very hard about it. And I'm like, well, if I'm at home and I cook for my friends, I'm going to serve the food. And it's also, you know, give a different, you know, for those cooks. It's like, wow, you know, I make those dishes. I mean, even if I have some ideas, they make the food. And then for them to just be able to serve the food, there is something else. It's more magical. There's something else that happens. And people love that. So it's just cook and sommelier. So people serve wine, people serve food and cook food. So it's pretty amazing. And there is no tips, so which is everything.
It's a big thing now.
Everything inclusive, and it's also, you know, bring a different of pride, I think, in what, you know, cooks have been treated in a way not. I mean, this is another. Yeah. I think this is another debate about how the way that cook in a kitchen, you know. It's just a hard life, and they don't make a lot of money.
It's such a hard life. It's such a key moment in the food world right now, between the tipping conversation that's taking place, the living wage conversation. Yeah. It is brutal to work in a kitchen. And I know all the top chefs like you talk about how hard it is to find talent. And, you know, I have restaurants, we go through the same thing. But I understand because it's brutal.
Yes.
You know, and you hear about these young cooks graduating from culinary school who don't want to spend 3 years in a basement deveining shrimp and cutting herbs and doing all that. And And I understand that.
Yeah. But there is also something, I think the media glamorize of being a chef. And unfortunately, you have a lot of those kids that go to school and cooking school. And I love that she used the word cookery.
Me too. I thought the same thing. We don't use that in America.
No. Sorry. English is so lovely sometimes. There is no narrative for them. They don't know. They think they're going to... It's like, oh, I'm going to go to school. I'm going to be a top chef. And no, it's... I think it needs to be a different conversation. And if you really want to be in the kitchen, it's difficult. It's long hours. It's hard. There is not really any family time. And you're not going to really make a lot of money at first, you know. It's difficult. And I wish also that the government will help, you know, that industry. Because at the end of the day, when you think about a society, it's best, you know, food is the core of a society. And if you don't, you know, foster and help that, you know, that core, it's just, I don't know if in a few years, I don't know if how many restaurants it's going to be, you know. It's just,
it'll be all like McDonald's and...
Oh, God, don't say that. I feel like it's changing.
Yeah,
I do.
Yeah. Speaking
slowly.
Of fostering, Dominique, I also read you're very interested in doing stuff for kids.
Yes.
Yes.
I love kids. I mean, kids is... I want to be more involved in that aspect, you know. I hang out with, you know, people that have kids and babies, and it's so magical when you know that when you feed them, and it's very important what you also give them, and this is where you can start, you know, teaching them about food and what it is and their body and the world and the climate change, and so this is where it starts. So yeah, I'm excited. I was talking about I want to do a baby food line, but like not just a baby food line. I want to do something very conscious, and then we were talking about maybe I want to do a book for kids.
And but you should be a guest on MasterChef Junior. That would be the best episode of that show ever.
Your baby cookbook will be the one I'm cooking out of, because your new cookbook is very...
I didn't know where...
Very
I
difficult.
Thought you were about to make another kind of announcement there, Claudio.
No.
What?
This book is... We published one... We're running one of your recipes in our next issue, and I would take
which
me,
one?
Like, months to make this
the
dish.
The ocean.
The sea.
The sea.
I love that dish.
Which is a beautiful dish.
We have to switch over to talking about this cookbook, because we truly have never seen a cookbook like this at Cherry Bomb or in any of our other lives, I guess. It's called Metamorphosis of Taste, yes. And it's co-authored with Karen Leibowitz.
Amazing.
Who's
yes.
fantastic. One of the original founders of Mission Chinese.
That's
right,
correct.
In San
yes.
Francisco.
Yes.
Fantastic woman. You know, when Dom walked in, I said, we just love your cookbook so much. And I said, I feel like we're doing it a disservice by calling it a cookbook, to which you said,
yes, it's
not a cookbook.
It's not a cookbook.
Not for mere mortals like me.
No. Maybe Nathan Myhrvold can cook from this cookbook. I will admit that when we were looking at the recipes and the list of equipment for one of them, it called for an aquarium pump. And I pretty much laughed out loud. But this
it's easy to get. Pet shop.
I have no doubt.
Just go to Petland.
But this really is the kind of book that you spend time with and that you look at as if it's an art book, and you keep it on your coffee table or where you just put books like that. I mean, it's really not. I mean, yes, you want people to maybe cook from this book, but...
I want people to read it.
Yeah.
To read also the word behind it and to be inspired. And like I say, it's like, you know, any recipe is kind of an inspiration, but when we talk about something, you know, any recipe or any feeling, there is a story behind it, and there is also a thought process. And I think I want people to understand that it's not just about food; it's about evolution and talk about it as human. You know, who are we, and the struggle that we've been, and the dream that we have, and hopefully, you know, we can better ourselves every day. And so it's also cerebral, but it's also conscious, but it's also sharing, you know, and I want people to be inspired, and I hope that I can be inspired if I inspire people. So
the cookbook is really the story behind Atelier Crène, which
yes.
is your acclaimed restaurant in San Francisco. And what you practice there is something that you call Poetic Culinaria.
Yes.
Am I getting that right? So this is definitely the first cookbook I've read where I've seen quoted E.E. Cummings, great poets like that. You talk about the people who inspired you, and it's everyone from Jean-Michel Basquiat to Miro to Nathan Myhrvold.
Yes.
Fantastic list. Simone de Beauvoir, I saw on the list too. And can you explain to us what Poetic Culinaria means?
Well, so Poetic Culinaria is the way that I look at the world. And culinaria doesn't mean that has to do with food. But, you know, you could argue food is very poetic. So I've been writing poetry since I was, I don't know, 4 years old. And it was in French before. And somehow my brain changed and switched to English. I don't know why, but it did. And I started to write, you know, and I remember when I went to a few restaurants and I'm like, well, one day I'm going to write a menu. And I'm like, I don't want to write Hollywood with kale and eggs, cook 15 seconds, 55 degrees. You know, I wanted to write it in a way that it was a story. It was an emotion. So I thought that poetry was the vehicle of doing it. It's also, I don't want people to come to the restaurant and just have a menu in front of them. I want them to interact and to be involved and just to surround themselves and to just like, it's very interactive also. And is people might think it might be, oh, she write poetry. Who she thinks she is? I'm not a poet. I'm just writing words to express myself. And it's a dialogue, so it's the way it is. So, and I hope, I mean, a lot of people like it, and this is the way I want to do it, so.
Yeah, I remember the last time I was going to San Francisco, I was like, oh, maybe I should check out Atelier Crin, but I don't eat meat, so I was like, I'll look at the menu, and then I knew the menu was a poem. I'd read it somewhere, but when I looked up the menu, I was like, oh, I don't know if this has meat in it or not.
Well, you know, I do an amazing vegetarian or vegan or pescatarian menu.
Okay,
so.
Next time.
Good news. Yes.
Pescatarian.
Yes. We will be in San Francisco at the end of the month.
Awesome.
So,
yes.
Also, Petit Crin.
Yeah, and Petit Crin is pescatarian.
It's
totally.
Just vegetable and fish only.
It's your dream restaurant,
it's
Claudia.
It's my dream restaurant.
Yes.
She will be there. So will I. I mean, when we come, we can't wait to see what's going on.
Well, I said that vegetable at the new meat, so.
So I think we're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back with Dominic Crin.
Hi, this is Linda Pellaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. And you know, I remember my very first show, December 2009. Ooh, it was a cold winter. And my first guest was William Grimes from the New York Times. Now, the one specific I had to tell him was wear a hat, gloves, and a warm coat, because our studio had no heat. We had no heat in the winter. We had no air conditioning in the summertime. It was rough going, but we were a startup, and we had a good show, regardless of the fact that we could see our breath. So today, we still have hurdles to climb over, and the only way we can get there is with your help. So if you would please consider being a member and press that little beating heart button in the upper right-hand corner to donate. It's going to help us have heat and electricity and air conditioning and really good sound with really great guests. Thanks for listening.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the second half of Radio Cherry Bomb. We're here with Chef Dominic Crin. She's the chef behind San Francisco's Atelier Kren and Petite Kren, and the author of the beautiful new cookbook, Atelier Kren: Metamorphosis of Taste. We wanted to talk about your career, Dominique, because you have definitely not had a typical career. You loved food. You grew up in Brittany, in France, and you did not go to culinary school.
No.
And you,
I went to a better school, the school of life.
I read in the book how even if you had wanted to go to culinary school and get a job in France, the timing just wasn't right for female chefs.
Yes. It wasn't right. Yeah. And that was okay. You know, it was just, I don't know if it's still right today, but it was okay. No, I mean, I think it was kind of interesting. And I was fascinated by not just the food, but like the symphony of it and the dance and the theater. And I knew I wanted to do something that bring me back to people and to express myself with like dishes and food. And it just, it was very important for me to go this way. So, I mean, I went to school, I studied business. I have a business degree, an international business degree. I also have a bachelor in economy. And I don't know if it's helped me today, but... And so I tried to educate myself to others, and then I wonder how to get it started, you know. So I moved to San Francisco, and
was that a difficult decision to leave France?
No, it was a difficult decision to leave my family for sure. But I knew that I needed to go somewhere else. You know, it's at a very young age I looked at the world as one. I've never looked at where I was born and the country I was born as the only things in the world. And I was very interested, you know, to experience something else. And my dad also taught me very young about diversity and then to just be able to discover things. So very young age also I traveled all over the world, and I wanted to be able to know what was going on. And I know I traveled places where people were like, why did you go there? You know, at a very young age, I wanted to go to Poland. And people were like, why Poland? It's like, well, because I was interested in about what's going on with Poland and Russia and everything, you know, the Cold War and all that. So it just, I want to know, you know, more. And then...
So that begs the question, why San Francisco?
Well, why not? I mean... It's America, the dream come true. No, I came here. My dad had a friend that had a company in Sausalito, and then so I came there. I just, you know, you can go and hang out, and I fell in love with San Francisco. I mean, there was like everything is in San Francisco: is diversity, is wine, produce, people, art, which is very important, and I just. This is where I want to be. So,
you showed up on Jeremiah Tower's doorstep.
Stars Restaurant.
How did you talk your way into a job?
I mean, I was not this type, so not that way, but no.
But you had no restaurant experience.
No restaurant experience. And I remember I just walked in and I just like, my name is Dominique Kren and I want to work for you. And I'm French, so I probably know how to cook. And you know, it was just funny. And then he put me on the grill that night, and I worked with Chef Sean. And Mark France was the executive chef. And it's so funny, I just saw him the other night. And then there was just like the rest was history. Jeremiah is, I think, one of the best chefs in the United States, and he has... forged the way to a lot of people and a lot of young kids. And I think we don't talk, you know, a lot about him. And I think he deserves so much more.
Well, he also didn't go to culinary school. He just started cooking at Chez Panisse.
Exactly. And then he's also, he had a vision. And I think is, you know, I think I have a vision too. And I think it's so nice when you meet someone that also have a vision and you're like, well, okay, so maybe there's nothing wrong with me. And so he really, you know, enable every person in his kitchen to be creative. Well, it was just, I mean, it was structure and it was, you know, obviously. And I think I'm who I am today, a part of who I am today. It's, I have to thank him for it. So He's funny as hell, and he's so good looking too.
Were you hazed in the kitchen as this young woman who had no technical restaurant kitchen skills?
I think I got lucky. I remember the protocol of Stars was if you start at Stars, you get to work for 6 months. You get to work downstairs prepping, and I didn't. I was walking the line, and then finally Sean was like, "Well, you know, I think I need to put you a few days downstairs because people are talking." I'm like, "Okay, I go downstairs." And then then I came back up. I think they were okay with me. I stand my ground, but I had to work very hard too. There was conversation that, you know, I didn't really like the way they were treating others, but I didn't want also to take the position like, oh, it's okay, it's the kitchen culture. I fought a couple of times, but, you know, at the end of the day, I also wanted to work and learn and keep going. And I knew if I had a restaurant one day, it would be a different way of treating people. So that was important to me.
So in keeping with your One World philosophy, a big opportunity came your way to go to Indonesia.
Yes.
And run your own kitchen.
Yes. So I was in San Francisco, and I was getting very comfortable, and people were liking what I was doing. And then I was approached to perhaps to just open this restaurant in Indonesia, female kitchen, female chef. And I'm like, Indonesia? Why? And then I sat down with myself and I become very, very reflective and where I was at the time. And I said, well, I'm not ready to, I still have so much to learn. And so I started to do some research about Indonesia, and Indonesia is also, it's a Muslim country. I didn't know anything about, you know, that culture, and it's also in Asia. And I was interested in perhaps just have a brigade of just female cook.
And you were the first female executive chef in the whole country. Yeah. People should know that.
And what was interesting is at one point I felt that we were kind of in a zoo and we were in the, people were coming and see us like.
Maybe that was part of the attraction.
I don't know. I just, you know, it was very interesting. But it was this moment where I got really politically involved with my team. Indonesia, you had to understand at the time, is it's third country meet very wealthy outside, you know, luxury, which I'm not crazy about it. And one night, my team worked so hard. And they were just lovely young women, and they were just begging to get the job. It's like, we never work in the kitchen. I'm like, it doesn't matter. Let's do it. If I can do it, you guys can do it. And I wanted to reward them, to invite them to dinner. And so I made this reservation in this very famous hotel in Indonesia, a great restaurant. And I made the reservation, and they took the reservation. And when I walked in with my team, the general manager came to me and said, well, you made the reservation, but you with Indonesian people. I'm like, yeah, this is their country. And it's like, well, I don't know if it's proper for you guys. And I'm like, uh-uh. And I say, you're going to serve us like we are VIP, and I'm going to pay the bill, and we're going to all sit down. And I realized that was crazy. I realized this world is... it's not right. It's like, who are we to go to a country and to just tell them and to treat the people of this country in a way that is not supposed to? So it kind of like made me think about, you know, respect and humility and also treating others, even if it's not the same, background or not the same country. We all won here. So
in addition to the cultural issues, it was a big moment of political upheaval in Indonesia. So you had to come back.
Well, on top of that, the hotel was owned by Soeharto brother, mm-hmm. which Soeharto was the president. So I remember I was ready to come out, to go out on, I think, Christmas Eve. And then the general manager of the hotel is like, no, Dominic, you can't. It's like, the hotel is surrounded by the army because people, that was their first, you know, people were scared. So I'm like, oh, no. And so I had to come back. And so I went back to, I didn't go back to San Francisco. I went back to, Los Angeles. And I spent a few years there. And then in 2007, I'm like, I got to go back to San Francisco and see what's up. So here you go, I am back.
Could you tell us how you came to open your first restaurant? Just everything that was involved with that, the finances, putting a team together.
Well, so in 2009, I had an accident and I almost lost my life. And I just realized that that's it. I need to do the things that I need to do. And Atelier Crane was always, you know, in the back of my mind for a long time. 2010, 2011, it was a terrible time as far as the economy in America. But I just, you know, tried to find people and they helped me to bring the money together. And we opened the restaurant and I just started to cook. And, you know, putting a team together is always difficult. And but I had someone with me, Juan Contreras, he's in the book and he's also my pastry chef. And we've been working together since 2006. And him and I, we just did it. And it's been an amazing journey. And it's been a way of growing and you know, evolving. And it's just, I just want to tell people that doesn't matter where you are in life. If you have a vision and you believe in something, just do it. Just go for it. And don't worry about what other people say. Because I remember when I opened the door, I was like, what do you mean? You're going to do a restaurant like this? And you should cook, you know, I don't know, French food like stew or pasta. And I'm like, no, I want to speak to people. I want to have a dialogue. I want to do something that I want to do. And so it's been an amazing journey. And today is still amazing. And we're still learning and evolving and growing. And I hope, you know, I think people are starting to understand it. It's lovely. It's lovely when you come to a place where you can share, you know, yourself and be vulnerable. Doesn't mean that the people that are going to come to your restaurant is going to like it, but at least I want them to be open and to be open to see what we're doing and hopefully to understand the message behind it. So.
Well, we could talk to Dom forever, but we can't. So I'm going to pass you over to Claudia for the Cherry Bomb Speed Round.
Easy questions, don't worry. Oh. All right, coffee or tea?
Coffee.
How do you take your coffee?
Not black, cream and sugar.
What's in your refrigerator right now?
Do you really want to know?
Yeah.
So, cornichon, cheese, butter, and...
So French.
And I think that's pretty empty right now.
Yeah. You're on the road. What's your favorite kitchen tool?
Oh, my tweezer.
Not an aquarium pump?
No.
Favorite food and least favorite food?
You really want me to say so?
I think that's the hardest question on the speed round.
You know, I do not like food where it's not conscious.
Can you elaborate?
Eating food that people don't care about, to cut corner. So that's why I will not ask. I don't like that food. I'm open to everything. I will try everything. But if I see the people behind the making of the food, that they don't care about anything, and especially they don't care about the kitchen or the people that, or the food, or being conscious about the environment, then I just like, no.
What's your favorite drink?
Oh, I love rosé wine.
What are some of your go-to places in San Francisco?
God, I have so many. Zuni Cafe, for sure. I used to go to Bar Tartine all the time. I think they're closing, they're reopening to not Tartine Bakery, but Bar Tartine. I mean, any places in my area. I live very close to the Mission. I love that area. I just want, you know, very simple places. So and hang out with my friend. But Zuni is definitely a place that I go back often, and for the oyster, and the food is amazing.
It's classic. What foods are you craving lately?
I love tomato. So it will be bagel, butter, cream cheese, tomato, and salt and pepper.
Wait, butter and cream cheese?
Oh, yeah.
You know New York's in the middle of like a bagel renaissance, so you can...
That's amazing.
Claudia can tell you where to go for a good bagel.
Yes. I'll tell you later. Where do you want to travel to next?
I've never been to Japan, so I want to go there.
Everybody's answering.
Everyone's saying that.
If anyone's listening from the Japan tourist board, we all want to go to Japan.
That'd be amazing, yeah.
Yeah, we had a guest the other, a couple weeks ago, say, I'm going to go to Japan and crawl into any hole and eat.
Well, she was just talking about how she gets the impression that anywhere you go in Japan, the food's going to be amazing.
I think so, too. But I think it's also, there is so much tradition that it's pretty mind-blowing. Yeah. And I just, that's the place that I want to go.
It seems like a place you can get lost, too. I sort of have this romantic notion of Tokyo, at least, of a place you can just, you'll have a hard time finding a way around it. So you might as well just give into it, get lost.
That's correct, yes.
And just see what comes your way.
I mean, obviously, yes. But there's also other places, but I think Japan. I mean, let's go together, so.
Yeah.
We'd love that.
We'd love that.
We want to do a special issue of the magazine, just on Japan.
Any sponsor, right?
Call us. Also, it's my lucky day because I'm interviewing Chef Krenn tonight at the 92nd Street Y. If you happen to live in New York City, consider coming by. You can buy tickets at the box office or through the 92nd Street Y website. And Chef will be signing copies of her cookbook after the talk. And I know we'd love to see you. And I feel really honored that we get to continue the conversation.
And bring the rosé, please.
We can arrange that. So, and lastly, we just want to thank American Express Open again for supporting this season of Radio Cherry Bomb and for supporting small businesses across the country. Don't forget to dine small and shop small. Next week, we'll share our special plans for Small Business Saturday, which is taking place November 28th. In the meantime, don't forget to shop small and dine small. And I can give a sneak peek, since Dominique is here and she's from San Francisco, we have a whole thing planned for Oakland. So if you're there on the 28th, we'll talk. It would be really fun to have you join us. So huge thank you to Chef Krenn. Congratulations on your beautiful book.
Thank you.
And on the opening of Petite Krenn. And we really are psyched to come to San Francisco in a few weeks and hang out with you there. And thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Carrie Diamond.
And I'm Claudia Wu. And that's it.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Kathy Irway, the host of Eat Your Words. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and Heritage Radio Network. To learn more or subscribe to the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com. You know who I think is the bomb? Frances Moore LePay, for being such a long-standing pioneer for food justice causes, and she's still writing books today. I think she's the bomb.